This is Radio Influence.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
With the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. The con man is behind the glass keeping us on track. We're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can get our links. You can get the blogs. You can get our podcasts. All the hookups are there. And if you have any ideas or topics you would like us to investigate, write to us. info@crushperformance.com. We may dedicate a segment of the show or an entire episode to your topic. But if you want to find out more about something that is related to pushing your performance forward, let us know. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at Jeff Crush. And if you're on the Facebook, go to Crush Performance and you can check out our contests, our podcasts, sneak peeks, giveaways. And in fact, right now, I've got a free ebook up on our Facebook page. It's called The Key to Performance. Listen, we just want to get you guys started on the right foot if you're going to pursue a dream, if you're looking to push your performance to the next level. This is all about our number one performance factor, and it's something that we address with every single athlete we work with, every organization we consult with. It's the starting blocks and the building blocks of performance, and it's all outlined in that book. And, well, let's just face it, I wrote it for you guys, so you can go to our Facebook page and get that free download. You can also get our podcast. We're on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, you name it, we're on it. So you can download, listen, share it, as we just try to spread the good word. Today, I'm really looking forward to the show. If you follow Crush Performance, you know that at the start of every major season, whether it's baseball, football, soccer, the NBA, and now the NHL, at the start of every season, we like to do a preview of things to watch in the league. There is so much we can learn from the highest level of sport. In fact, I always say to my athletes and to organizations I consult with, if you want to find out what's new and what's going on, look to the pros. And it's a two-sided coin. You can look to the pros to find out what not to do when we watch organizations, players, teams try and fail. But we can also look at what they're attempting to do or what they're trying to do or the things they've done in order to be successful. Whether it's an individual athlete, whether it's a team or an entire organization, there's so much to be learned there. And that's why we have such interest in watching the highest level of sport. And with the NHL season kicking off, there is no question there is a lot to consider here. And the NHL itself as an organization has made some very, very interesting moves in the last few years. They're doing a great job, I think, in promoting the sport from an NHL standpoint. But they made a really big decision this year not to participate in the Olympics, which I think has a silver lining for the game of hockey. And to help us break down this story and stories across the league, we're joined now by our good friend Will Fraser, who is co-host of the Nielsen and Fraser Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Fraser, thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, Crusher. I have so much time for you. I've put off, you wouldn't believe the list of things I've put off to join you today.
Well, how flattering.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, actually, I was actually very excited to have you on today as the NHL season gets underway. At the start of every season, in terms of the major professional sports, we always look at the storylines and what to watch. Teams, sure. Players, and some very, very cool storylines. And in the NHL, there is no shortage this year. I think it's an exciting time for hockey in general. If you were going to just sort of give people an overview of your impressions of this year's NHL season, what would you say? Like, what does it look like to you?
Well, the narrative that the league is going to try and push, and they're not wrong to do this, is the youth movement that is happening across the league. They kind of gone through that every decade sort of growth spurt that seems to happen in hockey. It seems to take about 10 years, and then you kind of get a three draft sort of draft after draft after draft where the next superstars all get infused. And that's what we're seeing right now. It started with Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews last year. So this is it's an exciting time to be a hockey fan, especially if you're in one of those markets that has benefited from the draft.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, there are a lot of stories. So here's what I kind of like to do. You know, just looking at the league in general, I thought we'd sort of go north, south, east, and west, and just sort of talk in general about those regions. And in the north, I just like to start with this. This is my number one team to watch, and not because I have relationships with the team or, you know, that I've helped them out in the past, but Edmonton might be one of the most exciting teams in the league this year for a number of reasons. Hey, listen, Will, would it be safe to say they might be, again, for me, the number one team to watch, but safe to say the number one player, maybe the number one line in the NHL. I do believe they have, if not the number one coach in the NHL, one of the top coaches in the NHL. And I also want to ask you about the massive turnaround this organization has gone through in the last 5 years. But if we talk about the top player, the top line, maybe the top coach, arguably, is that a fair summary of things to watch in Edmonton?
It is definitely the storyline. I think the temptation is to kind of try and pull back the reins a little bit on Connor McDavid and how much press he gets. The truth of the matter is there actually isn't enough attention to be playing to this player. It's not just that you're talking about put together a list of the best players in the NHL and he's at the top. He's everything we thought he could be and a little bit more. He is a generation level talent. He is in the likes of a Mary Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, Sidney Crosby type of impact player. He is going to have that type of career, and he is already having that type of an impact on the game. So this isn't just about having the best player in your sport. This is about having one of the best athletes on the planet right now.
Yeah, exciting stuff. And then, of course, Edmonton's been really smart in surrounding that particular player with incredible talent.
Well, you know what it is? It's just not overthinking it.
Right.
You know, it is bringing in professionals to do professional things. Which, I mean, sometimes people try and get cute about these things. Winnipeg's a really good example of an organization that has done everything right except for one thing. And hubris is the thing that trips up so many sports organizations time and time again. And you see it in Winnipeg, where they have decided that they are going to draft and develop everything. And they've had great success except in goaltending. And instead of going out and doing the approach that every other hockey general manager has been doing for the last 80 years, that is, if you can't develop it, you better go and acquire it. They have reluctantly stayed away from trying to fix their goaltending problems, and it has held them back. The Edmonton Oilers tried that for a decade of that we're going to draft and develop every position. Goaltending never worked out, and so they finally bit the bullet, went out and got an established pro. Wasn't yet established as one of the top starters, but he was established pro and brought him in Cam Talbot. And that was the big difference that you saw in Edmonton last year. As much of an effect as Connor McDavid has as far as putting butts in seats, going home with victories in a sport like hockey comes down to your goaltender. Baseball comes down to pitching. And NFL comes down to your quarterback. You can have all of the talent in the world, but if you neglect those key positions, you're going to sink yourself.
Yeah, and we're talking with Will Fraser from The Morning Show on TSN 1260 here. Will, Edmonton's my number one team to watch, not just because they're good. I think it's fascinating that they've gotten this good, and that was a process. Edmonton fans have been through the pain of a professional organization really, really struggling. The turnaround. New ownership, new building, but boy, oh boy, how important is Bob Nicholson to this whole big picture?
Well, let's not forget failure and how important that is as well.
Learning from failure as well.
Exactly. This is an organization that is on its third version of a rebuild. This is their third version.
Good point.
They started coming out of the Chris Pronger era when they were forced to have to trade him away and tried to do the rebuild on a fly. So they would go out and bring in one trade, bring in a free agent, and then also try and build from within through their own drafting and developing. Didn't take. So then they decided to take the tank at all costs approach and brought in successive three straight first overall draft picks. Right. And that didn't take as well because they just weren't lucky enough to be in a generational sort of upswell of talent that was happening. And then they got lucky. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And the smart thing that they did is they understood how lucky they were. And so then they go out and bring in the professionals that are going to be required to build a team around a generational talent. So that was the really smart thing that they did. They realized they were lucky and made the right decisions from there.
Okay, moving on. Hey, I got two teams I want to talk to you about. Just looking at North, we're starting at North in the NHL here. Calgary, I just want to touch on this because there's a lot of talk about Calgary. I'm not quite sure if I have the same feel on Calgary, though they've done some good things. I think they're a ways away from being where everybody's saying they're at. But boy, is it ever great to hear about this rivalry maybe getting reinstated? That's good for hockey.
It is good for hockey. They've got some big distractions going on in their market. They are at war with their city governance as far as getting a new arena. That is probably not going to help things as far as focusing all of your efforts on putting together a winning culture and all those types of things. The other problem that they have is they are not lucky. They have not been able to luck out and bring in a generational talent. They're trying to do it the old-fashioned way by bringing in as much talent as they can. But every team in a salary cap era, this is a Mark Messier quote, every team in the salary cap era has a fatal flaw. And it's just about how you deal with that fatal flaw, whether or not you're going to be successful or not. So you cannot eliminate the glaring weakness. Every team's going to have one.
Right. Good stuff. Great. The Montreal Canadiens. Will, I can't get a feel for this team at all. I just can't. I don't get a feel for their leadership. I see what's on the ice, but there's a disconnect there. It just in my opinion. I wanted to get your opinion about the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, you know how we talked about with Connor McDavid, the best thing that the Oilers did was understand how lucky they are and then do everything that they can to build around that. Montreal Canadiens have not understood how lucky they are with Carey Price in between the pipes. When you talk about generational talent, this guy will go down as a top five goaltender of all time, and they have not yet kind of sat there and went, clock's ticking. You only have so many years, so many seasons of good health with this player for you to go after a Stanley Cup. So that would be the major flaw in Montreal. They still don't know how lucky they are to have Carey Price.
Hey, what is the window there?
They've maybe got 3 years.
That's what I thought. Yeah, they maybe got four years on the outside, three is probably realistic.
With goaltenders, as far as that dominating performance, we saw it with Dominic Hasek, for example. Even though he extended and won a Stanley Cup later in his career, his prime was about a five-year window. And so that's what you're kind of looking at with a Carey Price. He may be closing in on the end of it.
Yeah, we're joined by our good friend Will Fraser from The Morning Show on TSN 1260. Will, O Canada, all right? So in 2015, the number of Canadian players in the NHL dropped just below 50%. You know, Canadian players are still making up the majority of the league. In 2016, zero Canadian teams made the playoffs. A year later, 5 of 7. Yep. This year, 2017-2018, could be a real bumper crop for Canadian teams making the postseason. I mean, if we just sort of try to look into the future. Sure. What do you think?
I think we're going to be hard-pressed to match what we achieved last year.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I think that Canada has a better chance of going further in the playoffs this year with more teams than they did last year, which is saying something with Ottawa going all the way to an Eastern Conference final. But you could see two teams in the East and definitely the Edmonton Oilers in the West going on extended runs. In fact, there is a non-laughable way that you can look at an all-Canadian Stanley Cup final this year. You couldn't have said that last year. So even though there may be a team that drops out, maybe we're only looking at four teams that make the playoffs this year, you're going to see better teams in there. Winnipeg's a perfect example.
Right.
If they actually do figure out their goaltending, that's another team that could all of a sudden not just make the playoffs, but push deep into it.
Yeah, so looking at the Canadian teams, I have sort of Vancouver on the outside. Yep. I think every other team, if they really handle themselves properly this year, they've got a shot of the postseason. But I agree, there are some teams in Canada that could go really deep. Yep. They're set up to go deep.
Right, you're absolutely... They not only will they go deep, but they could cause fits for the teams that they take on. Toronto and Edmonton will get the lion's share of the print, and they should, but there are some outliers. Ottawa, for whatever reason, I just can't believe in Ottawa. I feel that was more luck than anything. But you put in Montreal with a Carey Price, he can win a series or two by himself. And then once again, the Jets have depth throughout their lineup that if they actually get a goaltender, make a big run.
Great stuff. Hey, we're talking with Will Fraser as we preview this year's NHL season. Things to watch: great teams, great players, and unbelievable storylines. So, Will, let's go from north straight down to the south, where the storylines are a little slimmer, simply because of the hockey culture down there. But boy, there's something brewing in Tampa Bay, Mister, and it is incredibly special. And I think for me, when I look down south, that's the story in the NHL for me.
It's a team that has been handicapped by injuries to key players over the last couple of years. Their sister's team in Florida with the Panthers went through the exact same thing last year. So that's how you go from being a 100-point team to missing the playoffs the next year. So health is going to be key, and you can't predict health, especially in hockey. You can't. It is the most random of the team sports in all of professional sport. So injuries can and will happen, but if they stay healthy, the Tampa Bay Lightning could have a top three forward in Nikita Kucherov. They could have a number one defenseman. Hedman is that good. We could be talking about him being the best defenseman in the league on their back end. So you combine those two with solid goaltending in Vasilevsky, and they could be a team to watch.
So Stamkos, how important is he in this overall big picture?
Well, Stamkos, here's where the importance comes. He's no longer the best player on his team.
Right.
In fact, he may not even be the second best player on his team.
Yeah.
So the importance with him comes in A, accepting the role, and then really sort of flexing your muscles in it.
Does he have the ability to be that leader? I mean, to really step in there and understand where he's at in the big picture and drive the machine, because he's going to be passing the torch.
Well, I actually don't think it's about driving the machine. It's interesting. His general manager is Steve Yzerman, who some would say gets maybe a little bit too much credit at times, but I think it's a really unique situation. Oilers bring in Wayne Gretzky to hang out, to be nothing more than a sounding board for the Connor McDavids and the star players. And a mentor. And I think Steve Yzerman could have a really big impact on a guy like a Steven Stamkos, because Steve Yzerman was the man in Detroit until it came time for them to contend. And then he needed to start to take a step back. Sergei Fedorov was a better hockey player than he was by the time they were a champion. And by the time they were that perennial Stanley Cup favorite, Nick Lidstrom was a surefire Hall of Famer on the back end. He was the best, one of the best players on the planet at that time. So it's that ability to find your role and inspire other guys to find roles as well that I think he could really have an impact on.
Yeah, great stuff. And that's the power of the player and good leadership too, good leadership. Will. There's so much to learn from professional sports if you really dig down a little bit and just go beyond the fluff that we see in the media every day. Though that's good stuff.
Yeah.
But if you dig a little bit deeper, man, there's great stuff. And that is a great story. And that's why I'm going to be watching Tampa Bay this year.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot to learn there. Hey, going out east, there's a lot of stories here. But I want to start with you with the Penguins. Yeah. Is a three-peat plausible this year? And again, listen, I mean, the Oilers couldn't do it. The Red Wings couldn't do it. The Penguins, the Lemieux-Yager era of the Penguins couldn't do it. But boy, oh boy, this could happen.
Yeah, it takes some good luck. Once again, star players staying healthy is a key there. They also had the good fortune of being able to have two starting goaltenders on the back end. So even if one faltered or got injured, the other one could step up over the last little while. They don't have that security blanket anymore. What they do have, though, is the experience of two straight trips to a Stanley Cup final and a win. So this is a veteran group that is in by no means old. Like, that's the key. They are still right in the wheelhouse of being at the height of their powers. So you take wisdom and experience and add it to the athleticism that they obviously have. And yeah, they have the best chance at three-peating that we've seen from a team since the Edmonton Oilers. And as you mentioned, the Edmonton Oilers never did it.
No, they didn't. Hey, listen, we're talking with Will Fraser from the morning show on TSN 1260 from Nielsen and Fraser in the morning. Will, really appreciate this conversation. I've really, really been looking forward to sitting down with you on this one. We're on the East Coast right now looking at things to watch in the NHL. I want to go to New York. Mm-hmm. And there's one name I want to throw at you, John Tavares.
Okay.
This could be a league-wide story because is he going to stay with New York, do you think? I mean, $10 million per year, right? Maybe a mid-season trade that could change the landscape in the NHL.
Well, here's the thing. The further they get into the regular season without having him signed to an extension, the more likely it becomes that he walks as an unrestricted free agent. And it's really this simple. This is your leverage. In hockey, your knee can be blown out at any point. You can catch an elbow in the side of the head on your very next shift. So you're at a roulette wheel in a lot of ways with your career in the NHL, almost more so than any other sport not named football, in that your career can come to an end at any moment. And so to be able to lock in, like you do with a long-term mortgage when you're watching the interest rates, we all kind of play that sort of game where you go, okay, I'll lock in for 5 years now. And you just hope that was the right call. That's the leverage you're playing with when you're trying to re-sign
a John
Tavares.
Hedging your bets, right?
Yeah. And so I'll be honest. I respect the athlete that gambles on themselves.
Yeah. So do I.
Because, man, when it pays off, it pays off
big.
And Tavares has that opportunity.
Do you agree that's a story to watch, though, in the NHL?
Absolutely.
That could change the landscape, man, if he goes to a team that needs him in a charge for the playoffs.
Change the landscape. It's interesting. That's a cliche phrase.
Yeah.
In this case, it's not.
Right.
It's the actual reality.
I agree.
The New York Islanders, in an attempt to entice him to sign long-term, are literally changing the physical landscape of Belmont Park.
Yeah.
They have a proposal in front of city council right now to put an arena on that place. And the only reason they are pushing as hard as they are right now is in an attempt to convince John Tavares to stick around.
Mm.
If John Tavares isn't there, maybe they still go there. Maybe not. Maybe they move to Quebec to play in Quebec City. Who knows what their options are? The only reason they're pushing for the arena at this point in time, where it is because of John Tavares.
Oh, great stuff. Okay, going up a little bit northeast of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, here's a big story in the NHL. These guys are good. Like, they're really good. And would you say they're ahead of schedule?
Most would say they're ahead of schedule in a salary cap league with the salaries that we've been seeing that have seemed to be handed out over this last past offseason. Nope, they better be on schedule right now because their window as far as being able to hold this group of young talent together will be coming to a surprising end.
What a challenge in the game.
Well, that's exactly it. And so the idea of the long build, it can't be there with super talented young players. You can do the long build with the guys that need the incubation process, but when you have an 18-year-old come in and score 40 goals in his first season, there is no incubation process.
Yeah, it's go time.
It's going to be a $10 to $12 million contract within 2 years. So you better have your ducks in a row, and you better be pushing for deep playoff runs before those contracts come up for renewal.
Yeah, I agree. Great, great team to watch as well for more than one reason, Toronto. Last team out east I want to look at is Detroit. Just one of my all-time favorite teams because the organization just seems to do it right. They're in a little bit of trouble.
Did
it right. Yeah, I just want to get there.
Did it right.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I love that Red Wings. I don't like where they're at right now. I like the idea they got a new fancy building.
Mm-hmm.
But what the hell does that mean if they can't perform on the ice? Just your impressions of Detroit and where they're at right now. Because I hate to see that light go dim.
Here's the truth of it. In sport, more than anything else, other than maybe politics, myth is more truthful than the actual truth itself. And you see that with the Detroit Red Wings.
I like it, yeah.
Is the perfect example
right.
of it. Because you just mentioned it. They did it right. We don't know if they did. We won't know if they did, except for another couple of years after.
Well said, Will.
Because
I hear what you're saying.
Edmonton went through this, and we'll go through it again with Connor McDavid. It covers, when you have a player of that caliber, covers up deficiencies within an organization, allows you to be more patient with your younger players, and also allows you to make more mistakes. Like, as far as it allows you to bet on black more often than another team can because you've got the wiggle room. They had a player by the name of Nick Lidstrom play for them for 20 years. And in my opinion, a top two defenseman of all time. When you talk about a guy who can play 30 minutes a night and be one of the best who's ever played that position, covers up a lot of problems. And since he has retired, this is a team that you have seen goes into a steady decline because all of a sudden you are rushing up younger players before maybe they are ready. You are signing older players to contracts that you probably shouldn't be just to try and keep them around. And hubris all of a sudden takes root within your organization, which is you think you are better than you actually are.
Good perspective right there.
Yeah.
Detroit, very good perspective. And that's why they're one of my teams to watch this year. We're talking with Will Fraser from Nielsen and Fraser in the Morning on TSN 1260. Going out west, only a couple teams that I think we could talk about here, unless you have something else. But Anaheim and San Jose, I think maybe are my two teams that I'd just maybe like to discuss with you. I'm not sure out west.
Here's what's really interesting about watching both Anaheim and San Jose. Is they are the inverse of the Edmonton Oilers. We deal with this on our show, where sports fans, hockey fans more than any other, but sports fans like to believe that sports is static.
Right.
And so once a player establishes his level, he can never go above it, and he'll probably never go below it. It's just not the truth. I mean, when you look over a long period of time, peaks and valleys tend to even out, but over a season-by-season basis, you can see large swings in production. With Connor McDavid, there's a lot of people who thought at the age of 20 this was how good he was going to be. It's not. He'll be better. Wayne Gretzky scored 137
points.
then won the scoring title, scoring 164, then scored 92 goals and 214 points after that.
Insane.
So I'm sure there was a lot of people after that 164-point season who went, wow, that's, I can't believe how good he is. And then he got better. So with the young teams, you are going to see an uptick that was unpredicted. The interesting things about the Anaheims and the San Jose's is they have their star players, their best players, are reaching that mid-30 mark where that decline is going to happen. Now, it's tough to predict when the decline is actually going to take place. But when you look at the Corey Perrys, the Ryan Getzlaffs, and the Kesslers on the Anaheim, we don't know when that drop-off is going to happen. We have seen it start to happen in San Jose with the Joe Thornton. Now the question is how much longer can he still be an effective NHLer?
Right.
Not necessarily a scoring leader, but how much longer can he be effective in your lineup before he starts to hurt you?
And so you got to compensate for that, right?
Exactly. So those are the stories to watch in Anaheim and San Jose because they are really good hockey teams. But they are they hockey teams that can get better, or are they going to get worse?
And that's why I want to watch them.
Yeah.
Because, man, that's going to be fun to watch. I mean, just as a fan of sport, I'm really into the organizational approach. What happens from within? How do you harness and tap into the performance that you have in-house, and how do you add on strategically in a salary cap age to make sense for your organization with all the time while you're trying to speculate 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road? Because if you're not, you're screwed in this day and age.
And not only that, but how do you balance loyalty with the cold-hearted decisions that need to be made as a management team when it comes to keeping a team competitive? Los Angeles Kings would be the perfect example of a team that was not rewarded for the loyalty that they showed into their players. So you wonder how much does that affect other general managers who have seen that happen when they go, Dean Lombardi stayed loyal to a group that got him 2 Stanley Cups, and all he got was fired for that. So how much does that affect how other general managers now manage their own teams after seeing that happen to one of their
own? You have to learn, and that's why you have to watch the league, right? Great. We're talking with Will Fraser from The Morning Show on TSN 1260. Will, the stories, okay? Just quickly, we'll run through these. Vegas, what do you think about the new franchise? This is pretty exciting for sport. I can't remember the last time we actually saw a real big addition of a franchise. We've seen moves, we've seen changes of location, but a new franchise put a kink into a lot of plans.
They're an interesting case. Listen, sports will always prove just how stupid you are when you comment on it, right? As soon as you open your mouth, you're probably 80% wrong about whatever opinion you have. Las Vegas makes me feel that way because my initial results about the way I felt about Las Vegas and how they handled an expansion draft that was more generous than we've seen in a generation as far as an expansion team coming in were underwhelming. I was underwhelmed by the team that they put together, by the names that they had available to them. So, and I have been underwhelmed by the way that they have put this team together, including the general manager that they hired.
Agreed.
And it's not that these are bad people. These are experienced hockey people. But I don't, to me, location is everything. And you cannot separate the two. And so if we were talking about an expansion team in Quebec City, I would tell you they were doing everything perfectly. They were doing it exactly what you need to do, which is the long-term slow build towards competitiveness. We've seen it in Nashville. We've even seen it in Columbus to a certain extent. I'm afraid Las Vegas does not have that advantage.
The attention's not going to be there. Because
the NFL is coming to Las Vegas in 2 years' time. And these other cities, Quebec City would never have to worry about that sort of thing. Columbus doesn't have to worry about it. You can be patient in cities where that's not the case. When you look at Las Vegas, when the NFL comes to town, it's going to suck up all the oxygen in the room. And all of a sudden, the paying of the bills becomes a real concern.
Oh, good stuff. I love
it. You better be competitive because it's not just that it's an expansion NFL team. It's a young, up-and-coming Oakland Raiders team that could be on the verge of a Super Bowl when they make it.
Yeah, and Raiders are my team. I mean, we could talk NFL right now, but Raiders are my team, and they're going there, and it's going to be fun.
That's the real danger for that expansion franchise.
And that's a great perspective, because you know what? The average sports fan probably is not thinking like that, right? But I think you've got to, and that's why I want to watch Vegas. What's going to happen with this franchise? Because listen, there's a lot of options in Vegas, and if you're not on the top of the bill, you're going to struggle.
The worry is that they has the opportunity already passed them for being a competitive team, not a Stanley Cup contender, a competitive team out of the gate. And which is more important? They have an owner who wants to win a Stanley Cup, and that might be part of the problem, is sometimes ego of your ownership can get in the way of establishing a competitive, financially viable product. And if you have an owner who says, I just want to win championships, you know what happens? You stop winning actual hockey games.
Yeah, right. Will Fraser, the rule changes. A couple things.
Yep.
The focus from the officials on hacking and slashing. And I like the idea of the video challenge, the new rule to the video challenge. You know, if you don't win the challenge, you get 2 minutes of shame. So that's going to deter a lot of challenges, maybe speed up the game a little bit. Well, just really quickly, your thoughts on those rule changes, progressive or?
Well, needed.
Needed.
We'll see, though. This is a league that has general managers who have the final say on how stuff gets done, which is so different from the other two major sports.
Right.
When you talk about football and baseball, it's the owners in those groups that make the major changes because they make big time dollars off of these things that they are. They're day by day involved in what their sport looks like. Hockey is very different. They allow the general managers to make these decisions, and the general managers are concerned most importantly about themselves and their team. And so rule changes are great in their imaginations. And then when the practice comes in and it negatively affects their teams, they will be the first to howl about it. So we'll see how this plays out. And the other thing is until the day when Google takes over and you can just punch in an algorithm and the video is calling.
It's coming, by the way.
Penalty,
it's coming, man.
Exactly. Whether a penalty is or isn't, we're still going to be subject to human failures as far as they're officiating.
And
we'll see how they can do that.
Yeah, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I like, you know, and that's part of the game, right?
I guess. I look forward to the day when Google takes over.
Do you really?
Yeah, because...
Okay, well, hey, let's have that conversation another day.
Because I look forward to when the final outcome is determined by the athletes and the athletes alone.
Yeah, okay, good point. Right. Okay, great stuff. Here's a big one. We're talking with Will Fraser from the morning show on TSN 1260 right here. Will, a big question right now, and this one might take a little time, but we'll try to rip through it. The Olympics.
Yep.
Good or bad? I mean, we're
great.
Not
even good.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. And I know we're probably up against the clock.
No, but that's fine. We've got time here. There's a couple other real important things I want to
get to. Let me give you a couple of reasons why. First of all, location is terrible. It's South Korea.
Yeah.
No one in South Korea is ever going to care about hockey. It is not a market that you can grow hockey in South Korea. As far as the Olympic experience of growing the sport around the world, limited to no effect. It has not been growing the NHL product. You know what grows the NHL product? NHL hockey does.
Mm.
And so expanding TV access for NHL regular season games and playoffs into parts of Europe and Asia is more important to this sport than actually getting into the Olympics. And so the fact that you no longer have to cancel your season for 2 weeks at the heart of it.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people, the Canadian in you, the patriot in you, wants to see your Canadian boys go over there and kick the crap out of every other team in the world. Here's the problem with that. They do.
Yeah, right.
And so it's really tough to grow a product if the result is already pretty much guaranteed.
Yeah.
And so if you are a Denmark hockey fan, as much as you love hockey, watching your team get their head kicked in the Olympics every year doesn't make you want to watch the Olympics.
No,
and doesn't make
you
want to watch hockey either. So as much as we love it as Canadians, that last Olympics in Sochi showed me that the Canadians have figured out the blueprint for putting together a championship team when it comes to Olympic events. I would never send them back ever again because as much as we love watching it, they were holding teams like Sweden to 12 shots against.
It was a hostage situation.
It was dominance like we have not seen since the original dream team in basketball.
So here's a question for you then, and I agree with everything you said. I first of all, I don't like the stop of the NHL season. I think it's way too disruptive for what's really important for those teams and the franchises. I don't like the risk of a player going over there and potentially getting hurt and really upsetting what could happen for a team. But let me ask you this, Will Fraser. Do you like the idea? What an opportunity for great amateur players to go represent. I mean,
is it anymore though?
Well, could it be? I mean, look at the World Juniors. What a great event that is.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Could the Olympics every 4 years maybe capture some of that junior world championship flair?
If it was run by somebody other than the IOC.
Yeah, right.
Here's the problem. Here is the canary in the coal mine. If you have seen the documentary Icarus that is available on Netflix, you will never watch the Olympics the same way ever again. We are not talking about teams that or athletes that are cheating and doping. We are talking about active doping from the highest levels in government. That is not just that they're cheating, But everyone knows they're cheating and is allowing it to happen now. It used to be the days of they were getting away with it. And we all suspected it, but we couldn't catch them. We can catch them now.
Yeah.
We decide to take a blind eye to it. What has happened with Russia and the IOC, the last Olympics, and now the upcoming Winter Games as well, to me, has tarnished the entire event.
Agreed.
Earlier this week, the Brazilian head of their bid committee was arrested because they know that he bribed Senegal $2 million so that his country could host it. His country is in financial ruins because they did host it. Sochi allowed for the most corruption we have ever seen infiltrate a single country in Russia because $90 billion was spent on it. So you have to ask yourself, do you want your athletes involved with an event that is so tainted at this point?
Will Fraser, we're going to do an Olympic show this fall because, of course, being a Winter Olympic year, let's reignite this conversation right here because this is an important conversation. I mean, beyond hockey, there's a lot to talk here. But in terms of the hockey tournament and what it could potentially mean for hockey, all that other garbage aside, could this be a good opportunity for young athletes to go showcase their talents?
I think young athletes have all the opportunities in the world.
Good point. With the
Ivan Hlinka as well as the World Juniors and other high-end minor hockey tournaments that continue to add tournament after tournament after tournament. High-end amateur athletes, they get their due. They are getting noticed. It is the best time to be alive as an amateur athlete is right now because not only are they noticed, but sponsors notice as well.
So amen,
there is more money available to amateur athletes than ever before as well. So this is actually a good time. You don't need the Olympics to shepherd in your young athletes anymore.
Yep, agreed. And it could be disruptive in a lot of different ways as well. Okay, Will Fraser, two more things that I want to get to as we sort of showcase this year's NHL season. And this one's a really cool story for me. And you alluded to it earlier in our conversation, the young players and the old players in the game. We're seeing it in every single sport across the board. We're seeing this incredible new generation of talent come in, very prepared for the highest level of sport. We're also seeing the great veteran talent extend their careers and still contribute at an incredibly high level. So we're seeing this bubble grow and grow and grow. And it's exciting on both ends. Let's just comment about the young guns. I mean, the top 50 players in the NHL came out earlier this year. And it was interesting because in 2015, there was only one, and it was Connor McDavid. 2016, there was four. This year, there's as many as eight young first-year players in the top 50. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, and what a beautiful trend, I think.
It's a good sign. It tells you that the league's getting faster. But I do worry that we are once again seeing the demise of the sport itself. And I'll explain. Hockey players are coming in better equipped and better prepared, which is why they're making impacts earlier in their career. At least the high-end players are. Part of that is because they're being identified as elite level athletes earlier in their careers and being given more opportunities to play at high end championship events. When you take what a 17/18-year-old hockey player goes through within his draft year, he's never not playing hockey.
Right.
He starts with an Ivan Hlinka tournament, then goes into major junior, represents his country at a World Junior Hockey Championship, goes back to junior. If he's lucky enough, he'll go into the playoffs. If not, there is then a U19 tournament, U18 tournament that they can then be eligible for in as well at the end of the year. And so they then go into that, into a conditioning camp that the NHL then puts on so that they can then judge them. So they are constantly in the room. Then they go into a rookie camp during that summer and a rookie tournament before they go into a training camp. So part of what you are seeing, and the part of the reason why you're seeing a drop off a lot of times, the quoted sophomore slump, is because you see a lot of players actually get time off after their first year. And so instead of being 100% committed to their sport, they're actually allowed to have a social life. And it does tend to drop off on some athletes, whereas that first year, they had no time to think about anything but hockey for a year straight. And they are hitting the ground running, whereas every other guy has had a summer at the lake where they're still trying to get the kinks out. You saw it this year with the Oilers, with Kyler Yamamoto, who came in and earned a spot at a camp. Part of the reason he earned a spot at a camp is because he had just finished playing in every single tournament and cycle finished up that cycle. So that's part of what you're seeing. You're seeing players that are more prepared at a younger age. Problem is it costs money and it costs a lot of money, which is also It's making an already questionable athlete base as far as where you can choose from even more refined. And
it
what
gets
I mean
elitist,
by that,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, what I mean by I that is unless mom and dad are both earning six-figure incomes, it makes it very
or willing to take a second mortgage out on the house, which is happening.
Makes it really difficult for you to keep your kid in a sport like hockey past the age of 13 because the price just eliminates it. So in a lot of ways, we're refining the way that we identify talent, but I do fear that we're also going to start to eliminate the available talent heading into it.
We're there already. In my opinion, in our show, we talk about this quite often. I honestly believe across the board, the way we're handling developmental sport right now, we're destroying more talent than we're truly, truly creating.
Gordie Howe grew up playing on ponds in skates that were two sizes too big. You will never see that again.
Right.
You will never see that athlete from Northern Saskatchewan who grew up poor making it to the NHL. It's impossible for that athlete to make that jump through the amateur ranks unless they have financial backing behind them.
Yep. It's a business. It's a business now.
It is a business, but it's not allowed to be a true business. And we can get into this about the idea of an amateur draft or not. But when you look at major soccer or football around the world, part of their success has actually been the fact that there is no amateur draft system. So it has allowed professional clubs to set up and fund their own soccer academies. And so when they find a 9-year-old kid, they go to the parents and say, you sign the contract, we'll pay for everything.
Barcelona's international academies, classic example.
So that's why you still have a strong youth movement throughout the world of football is because the cost imperative is just not there. Yeah. If you're talented, somebody else is going to pay for you to be able to take the next step.
Yeah. Well, last thing when we look at the NHL that I wanted to talk to you about, 6 new coaches in the league. I think this is a great trend. This whole recycle thing in professional sport has driven me nuts for years and years. There's so many great young, I guess, leaders out there that are just looking for their crack and their chance. The NHL has really opened the door to some new coaches this year, and I think it's exciting for the landscape.
It can be. The worry in hockey is sometimes you make change just for the sake of change, and we saw that in this city a lot.
Yes.
We saw basically snake oil salesmen be able to get themselves into jobs that they were not prepared for, and the team was not ready for them either. New coaches work really well with veteran hockey teams. The bad mix comes when you have a new coach with a new hockey team. That's usually a
too much learning.
Exactly.
To be done.
That is usually way too many people who don't actually know what they need to do. Todd McClellan had the absolute blessing of being able to first come up through the Detroit system as an assistant coach, win a Stanley Cup, and then when he became a head coach, he took over a veteran competitive team in San Jose and was really able to refine his coaching style before he took over a young Edmonton Oilers squad. You see the same thing with Mike Babcock in Toronto. There's a reason why those two young teams are as competitive as they are. It's because they didn't hire the young coach. They went and found the experienced one. So there is a balance that needs to be found as far as when you're bringing in a young coach.
Great stuff, Will. Well, north, south, east, and west. Those are the stories, storylines, the teams, and the players to watch this year. Will, appreciate your insights here, man.
Always
really good stuff.
Yeah, we'll come back and we'll tear apart the IOC.
Yeah, later. No, I'd love to. We'll get you on and consider it done.
Absolutely.
Right, perfect. And there you have it, the Crush NHL season preview with our good friend Will Fraser from TSN 1260. That is a good hard dive into the teams, the players, and the storylines to watch this season as the NHL season gets underway. There's a lot to follow. And again, there's nothing like looking at the highest level of sport to find out what to do and sometimes what not to do. If you want to share this episode with friends or get to the Crush podcast archives, go to our website, crushperformance.com. All the hookups are there. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, go to our page. It's called Crush Performance. Contests, podcast sneak peeks, giveaways. And right now we have our free ebook up there right now. And this is all in the name of just spreading the good word and sharing good information. It's called The Key to Performance. It is the starting blocks. If you're looking to improve your performance, or if you're in charge of an organization, a team, even students, this is a good read, I think, because this is our number one priority for pushing performance to new levels. And it's all right there. I wrote it for you guys and anybody you want to share it with, so do so. Coming up in the next few weeks on Crush Performance, we're going to be diving into the baseball offseason. What should you be doing? If you're a coach, player, or parent, this is an episode you'll want to listen to. We're going to talk to the high-performance guys from the Toronto Blue Jays to find out what they're doing for this offseason and what developmental players should be thinking about
in terms of maximizing their performance, reducing risk of injuries, and managing themselves properly, not just over a year, but over the course of their careers. It's going to be a fantastic conversation. The Crush War on Sugar will continue, and later in the month, we're going to talk to our good friend Jim Fannin once again, as his new book, Blueprint, is about to come out. We're going to talk about what kind of blueprint you can put together to maximize your performance. So thanks again for listening, everybody. Lots of great stuff coming up on Crush Performance, and we'll look forward to talking to you next time. Take care.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Fabulous Sports Big Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I got to be honest with you. I always felt like if you wanted to kneel or stand, and I have to tell you this, I have some people who are Jehovah's Witnesses. They don't get up for the national anthem. They never did. At first, I was kind of weird, and now I know the people. But they don't get up for the national anthem. And this whole thing just, oh, it's a terrible thing. I don't know if it's a terrible thing. You know what? If you don't like it, it's fine. But people, it's become this whole politicized thing that people didn't even realize. And just because it's the flag and all of that, you people need to be around in the 60s. You have no idea what this is about. You know, and I have to tell you, PBS, Ken Burns, it was unbelievable. I think the last one might be this weekend. But it's all of the stuff that we saw here every day at 6:30. Every day it's what we saw. But they have everything that went on from the Vietnamese side, too. And I watched this thing, and at some point they had this man who was there, and he was in, you know, an army uniform. And I said, that's somebody's father. I mean, that man was dead. And there were other people, and you could kind of see from the side, and I thought, that's somebody's kid. And it kind of freaked me out that, yes, at the beginning they say, this is going to be squirrely, and it is squirrely. But later on they say, I want this guy's head, and they get his head, and they put him there, and I'm thinking, he's somebody's son. He's somebody's brother, even though he was from North Vietnam and all that. I can't tell you, if you didn't see it, you need to see it. It's just incredible. You know, I probably, through friends, people that were brothers of friends of mine, I probably could think of maybe 9 or 10 people who passed away from the Vietnam War. But, you know, they had something like 50,000 of this and well over 200,000 of the North Vietnamese. And for what? We get down to, it didn't mean anything at all. And if you watch it and you see what this country was doing and how people like me were in places like Boston. And I mean, and I wasn't even that old, you know, but I took off like crazy. But I went to Boston. I went to New York. I mean, I don't remember going to Washington, but if there was a protest, I was there anyway. But it's really good. And I keep thinking to myself, sometimes when I watch it, it hurts me inside. Not, I don't know if that's the word I can use, but I feel that way inside. And when they show the protests and they show people beating you up and they took over NYU and all those kind of things. And I just remember being in the protest side of things. And it seems so weird, even though we're so divided right now. It seems kind of weird. And when you look at the NFL, you know what? I think that's part of the thing. If you don't like it, it's all right. And let me just tell you this thing about in honor of America, that crap never happened until Nixon did it sometime in the early 70s, 71, 72. He was gone in 74, right? Bastard. But you know what? I mean, we never had that. There was never an honor America until he said, we got to do this right now. And I thought, well, I was out there in the demonstrators and they were calling me a communist and a pinko. And I thought, God, that's the best you can do. That's the best. But little by little, you began to realize that 80% of us, it became 40 and there were 67%, close to 70% that did not want this war anymore. And we'll never see that type of war again.
The Fabulous Sports Big can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.